This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Hey, Rog. Good morning, sir.
Well, good morning. How are you doing today?
Doing real well. It occurs to me, if I'm not mistaken, this is the second big 511 alarm fire for the Chicago Fire Department in what, about a week or 10 days?
You know what? You're right.
Now
that you mention
that?
It's been within the last 2 weeks, there have been two major fires. That's right.
And they're very, yes. I mean, these are quite unusual because of the manpower that is required and the apparatus that is required on the scene. I mean, they are such big events, but, I mean, we will go many, many months between 511 alarm fires.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah, we've got the latest report we had is 170 crew members there right now, eight master streams. So they've got eight huge hoses on that thing. And it's a block-long building. It's very long and very tall. It appeared to me from the pictures I've seen at least 3 to 4 stories tall. So
and dozens of pieces of equipment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sure north of 50 pieces of equipment out there at a fire.
It has to be, easily. All around.
The beauty of it is, if you can look for a silver lining to the cloud, it's a magnificent weather morning.
Right.
You know, you think about something like that happening with our firefighters in Chicago in January, which has been the case at times, as you may recall, that's when it's miserable. Or conversely, on a 90-degree day in the summer.
Exactly, with all that equipment.
Yeah, well, you have to have even more firefighters because they have to be rehabbed.
Right.
You know, as they're fighting the blaze, the heat takes its toll. They got to be pulled out, rested, relaxed a little bit as much as possible, and others have to come in. And that's why many times at a fire of this magnitude, you'll see a lot of equipment sitting there that may not be apparently used, but it was used to get firefighters to the scene.
Right. And right now, even though the temperatures aren't that warm outside, you're still dealing with a very hot fire.
Right.
And so, you know, we haven't heard yet of any firefighters succumb by smoke or by excessive heat with all the equipment they have to wear. But we're keeping our eye on that. We're keeping our eye on anyone who might have been in the area when this broke out. We don't have any reports of any injuries yet, but this is a big one. We're going to keep our eye on it for you.
Keep us posted, sir. We appreciate it. Take care, Rog. Roger Badish of the WGN Newsroom. Max Armstrong with you on the Saturday morning show this morning. Markets, well, it's been kind of interesting. Every Saturday morning we do visit a little bit about what's been going on in the grain markets, and it was a pretty good October for producers as we saw the prices gaining ground as the combines were moving at a good pace. We're cleaning up the harvest now. I talked about all of this week with Jerry Goodell, Price Group. And I said, hey, Jerry, after an October market rally such as the one we experienced, what now, sir?
Well, it's going to be quite interesting. We had an interesting setback the last week or so. I think the November corn production number is going to see some slippage here. After October slips, we tend to have an idea that November slips too. I think it's been 8 out of the last 10 years that it's slipped in that situation. And also the trade tends to kind of overestimate the number. Soybeans, a little different story. That tendency has been, particularly with this positive number we had last month, probably up. So I'm not sure we're in the 53 bushel average yield versus the 51.4, I think it was last month. I'm more in the 52 category. Definitely good yields being heard out there. Sometimes I think we're hearing some of the same ones we heard the time before. But, hey, you know, at this point, good crop out there. Good demand, though. Fabulous demand. Again, this week we had over 2.5 million metric tons of beans sold for like the second or third week in a row. And so I think that's a positive for us. The big thing is, though, to get a huge kind of positive move to the upside it's going to be some kind of weather out of South America. And I think with the uncertainties of La Nina on an overall stance, right now it's not really heavy duty, but I think there is a chance that that is still in the a factor. And after last year, any blurb in South America is going to have a lot more impact than it had last year.
Just to come back to yield for just a moment, before we leave that subject, I've talked to a lot of growers who said, man, you know, we've had some very good yields, 60, 70 bushel yields coming out of these fields. Where are the bad beans? Are there any out there?
I think there's some bad beans in these double crop areas that's come through here with the late dryness. And also the southern beans, I don't think were as strong. If you look at the latest drought monitor, quite a big spot's developed in that Alabama, Tennessee, Kentucky, southeast areas. And that, I wouldn't say that's a disaster. That's the problem of that we're not going to see that. But also I think that the 70 bushel beans were a lot stronger early, a lot more low 60s the second time around in that. That's still very strong. We've got a 61 or 62 bushel Illinois yield already in here. So how high is sometimes something to think about.
So you're not of the opinion that that corn yield could also go up. And you're reflecting back on what we've done in previous years. That, as they say, past performance is no guarantee of future performance, right?
Right. I understand that. But I'd have to also understand what I've heard. Yes, there's people's had 205 bushel yields in Iowa. They were thinking 230. There's that kind of scenario that's come through. There's strong yields out here, folks. I'm not denying that at all. But I don't sense that we've got some unbelievable state yields out here already. And the southern part of Illinois definitely does not anywhere close to 2014 yields. I think that's going to compensate for the middle part of the state. Iowa, some similar situations there. The one areas that's going to have some positive yields and records is going to be the Dakotas, South and North Dakota, and many areas of Minnesota definitely have better than 2015.
But, you know, you make an interesting point. I have heard from a number of corn growers, yeah, you know, we had good corn yields. They were not exceptional corn yields is what they told me.
Exactly. And the key thing here is comparison to the best yield they had. Eastern Corn Belts 2 years ago, Western Corn Belts last year. I think those are the situations where overall, good seal. Does a 170 yield all of a sudden turn us bullish? No, not in a big way, but it also takes the psychology of going back down to $3 and just laying there forever away too.
So just to clarify in our minds, where are you on your corn and bean yields looking ahead to the USDA report Wednesday?
I'm a 170, 1.4, I guess it'd be 2 bushels down. And I'm a 52 up 6/10 of a bushel going north.
How are we doing on usage? I mean, and you talked about the excellent demand. Are we ahead of USDA's numbers with the demand on beans?
We are on target to meet the USDA's projections on export sales. The corn yield, corn side of things, we're solid. We're right on target. That's the one that's maybe a little dicey, but I think people have forgotten the fact that Brazil is virtually out of the corn business. Ukraine is a minor competition. We're going to have strong exports. Once we get this, we have a real capacity issue right now. We cannot push 100 million beans and 50 million corn and 20 million wheat. We only have about 150 million worth of capacity on a weekly basis.
So is that limiting exports, our ability or inability to move it?
On the corn side, it has, but I think they planned on that. We had a very super September. I think we'll have a very strong December and January. This November, late October and November, is going to be for beans.
We have grain stored outside. I've heard reports of corn piles. That is not unusual, and some elevators just plan on that, do they not?
They do. They have a kind of permanent temporary storage, as some people have called it. And I think the only areas that probably is going to be a major concern is going to be the Western Plains and the Nebraskas and the Dakotas and those areas where I think that I haven't seen that much east of the Mississippi, partly because we didn't have the crop last year, so we had more commercial storage available. And I've heard some pretty good basis levels starting to pick up for that December period for some places in the east.
And that's what growers are really going to be needing to watch for, right?
Definitely. The basis side of this thing is going to be a feature for them. The bean side, there's been constant kind of movement as the harvest is going on. I think the corn that came in was the corn that was already sold, and there hasn't been a lot of corn sold if they can hold on to it. Now, that doesn't mean that in some cases they can do everything. But in most cases, they are trying to hold on or find some place to put it, and that's causing some strength in the East.
Government checks came out a few weeks back. That gave some farmers a little breathing room, didn't it?
It did. It did. It's hard to figure out how many dollars you're supposed to get or how much came through, but it was dollars.
I think most everybody was surprised.
Exactly. Partly because they completely forgot about how the whole thing works, because it is a whole year's price delay before you come out with that number and figure out what the value should be. But in general, you had some pretty good deals the last few years. You've got a pretty good check.
Managed funds. Where are they? What are they doing now? Have they buttoned up a little bit ahead of this election? Is there some nervousness on their part? How would you assess what they've been doing, what they're up to now?
Well, I think to some extent, up until this last few days, there's been somewhat of a relaxing of their short positions and that. They never really were totally short by any means in the beans. It was mostly corn and wheat, and there has been some short covering in those areas. But on this latest setback here, there has been some talk of some further short positions coming back into the market. But in general, the uncertainties of the election has provided some uncertainty and less participation, for sure.
What's your gut feeling for the waning weeks of this year if that export demand stays constant? What kind of price activity do you think we could expect?
Well, I think that we're probably getting near our bottom side of our range. I think we're going to continue in this 360 top side. Well, in the March, you might see a 370 out there against a 350, maybe a 345. In general, I don't sense that there is a huge market going on in the corn right now, but I think that there will be a chance for some optimism as we go along, because I think there's less of old crop supplies and also some uncertainties in South America. Right now, we even have some uncertainty of too much wet weather in Argentina that's lessening some of the planning that they were talking about just a month or so ago. They were talking about a 25 to 30% increase, and now they're not so sure about that happening in there. On the soybean side, is there a chance for 10.50 kind of futures price? I'd say that's really the top side of things. But I think the January is going to still bounce around in here from there. Same issues on the export side of things is going to give us some base and some positives. But we're going to need some kind of spark, which I think is going to be available because the world is a lot more sensitive to what weather's doing in South America this year after what happened in last year's situation.
Yeah, flooding rains that damaged the crop in Argentina. That's what Jerry Goodell was thinking about there. He's with Price Group in Chicago, talking about the price activity that we've seen here of late in the grain market. Coming up is Samuelson Says Big O will be along momentarily. All right, Saturday mornings here, we hear from Orion on Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products.
Wink Products Company has been providing professional strength household cleaners and other problem solvers for nearly 70 years. So when they come up with a new solution, people listen. Wink Lime and Rust Remover dissolves rust and hard water stains, soap scum, and buildup on bathroom sinks, shower doors, tubs, toilets, and tile. It even cleans lime scale off your humidifiers, tea kettles, and cookware. Find a store near you or purchase online at wink.com. That's WHINK.com. I know that over the years I've discussed several topics over and over again, but it's because they stay in the news and they need your attention if you're involved in agriculture. And you know my feelings on GMOs. Well, let me give you the latest chapter. The latest chapter in this craziness of the anti-GMO movement. It's the proposed resolution by the New York Parent Teacher Association to ban from the state schools all foods and drinks that contain genetically modified ingredients. This biotechnology science, and I'm quoting the resolution now, states, creates unstable combinations of plant, animal, bacterial, and viral genes that do not occur in nature or through traditional crossbreeding methods to obtain a desired trait or characteristic. And it goes on to say, some research suggests an association between GMO and GE food consumption with grave health hazards, such as tumor development, kidney and liver toxicity, and even death in laboratory and food production animals. And it goes on, not quoting science, at least science that I've seen in 150 studies, but it says until GMO and GE food safety is conclusively supported by good science, the New York State Parent Teacher Association proposes acting with caution and keeping these products out of school-provided food and drinks. Ultimately, that would mean a lot of U.S. kids could go hungry, too, if we can't use technology to produce the food we need. And then the other topic, Humane Society of the United States. I talk about them a great deal. But here's the latest. The Center for Consumer Freedom revealed the Humane Society of the United States has laid off 55 staffers. That's about 10% of its staff. In the midst of a financial shortfall that is believed to be at least $20 million, according to the Center for Consumer Freedom. So that means they're going to be shutting down an office or two by November 18th. But the layoff comes despite $150 million in offshore funds. What's going on, Humane Society? My thoughts on Samuelson Says.
Roger, thank you, sir. Sure appreciate it. Hope you have a good weekend.
You too, sir. Have a great one.
Boy, the weather is just remarkable, isn't it? Ideal.
Yes, it is.
A number of our farmers have had just tremendous harvest weather, and some are continuing to work on field work after bringing the crops in, or, well, some are still tidying up those fields, and you can still see, for example, in the Chicago area, as you get in and around the suburbs, there are some fields that have not yet been harvested. Those tend to be last on the list, as it turns out, because the farmers often are out a little farther away, and sometimes those fields that are closer in and around the suburbs are not really given full attention because the landowner maybe is standing there in the path of progress waiting to have that land developed, and they don't want to put too much into it in terms of fertility. And so sometimes the farmer who is farming that land just waits to take that one last on the list. And sometimes the drainage is not good in these parcels that are in and around the suburbs. Again, the landowner, and the landowner may not be an individual. It may not be a family. It may be a development company, and they're just keeping crops on there until they put some structures there. And so they don't want to put in any kind of a drainage system that will enhance crop production. They don't want to make that kind of an investment. So quite often, the fields that are in and around the suburbs wind up with standing water in them, especially during the growing season. And part of that is what's being built around them. When you put all of that concrete out here, that's why we have flooding problems from time to time in the metropolitan area. And, of course, that water will tend to stand on the farm fields, and the crop production isn't that great out of those fields. So the grower who farms it may be farming more acres on out away from the suburban area, and we'll go to that parcel last. So that's why sometimes you'll see corn or soybeans still standing. I noticed a corn still standing along Interstate 80 yesterday coming through the Chicago area. You'll find some corn and beans yet along Interstate 88 in closer to the suburbs. And that's why it may stay there longer than what you see on out in the rural area. Well, Barb Detterman is a lady I talked with a few days ago. Barb is a past president of the National Pork Producers Council, lives on a hog farm in Iowa. Early Iowa is her town, but I caught up with her because she is the first vice president of the United States Animal Health Association. Even though she is a pork producer, the United States Animal Health Association is pork producers and people in the cattle industry, but it's also veterinarians, people who care for those food production animals. Well, I asked Barb to explain a little bit to me what they're all about.
USAHA is a really cool group. I have to tell you, because it brings so many different people together. It brings regulators, it brings researchers, it brings producers, it brings allied industry, everybody together to be able to have a conversation and make sure that we are addressing the animal health needs in the United States.
You have some common goals, some common interests, to be sure.
Oh, we definitely do. And one of the good things about having this type of meeting is that everybody can bring their part to it. Otherwise, everybody has their own tunnel vision about it. And when you get together and you can all talk about it, then everybody has a chance to get those concerns laid out and work together towards a common goal.
Sometimes in diverse groups, it's tough to find that center of the road, that common ground. Do you struggle to work that way sometimes?
No, this group has been very successful, and I think any group that's having their 120th annual meeting has found the secret to making it work. I think a lot of it's because everybody understands that it's very complicated. Animal health is a very, very complicated process, but everybody has that common goal of making sure that we keep the industry safe.
One of the researchers on the program here talked a little bit about the costs of disease and why you need to address these things. And he talked about everything from the actual financial cost to the societal cost to the emotional cost on farm pork-producing families. There's a very good reason you attack what you attack.
You bet we do. We not only the cost, like you said, economically, because it's our family's livelihood and how we educate our kids and do all the things that we do, but that emotional, it is so hard if you have a disease hit your operation to have the death loss. You know, we take care of those animals every single day. We have a bond with them. Losing the animals when a disease hits is very, very hard. Plus then worrying about the future of your family farm.
Let the record show, there are some amazing success stories. I mean, if we just look back over the past 10 years, there have been some very good stories about snuffing out or tamping down significantly an animal health problem.
There have been a lot of success stories, and I, quite frankly, will give this group a real heads up for that, a real hats off for that, because of being able to talk about it. Lots of times folks are working on research for those things, but if we can actually get it to the people who can apply it, and then the people who can write the regs so that we can make it all work within the regulations and make it work across the board.
It strikes me that sessions at a meeting like this, friendships, hallway discussions, play a significant role, really, in building that communication between important research partners.
Oh, it does make a big, big difference. Last night, we gave our Medal of Distinction to a pork producer in South Dakota, Jim Leafstead. And Jim came back. He was president about 10 years ago, and he had a really exciting time meeting all his old friends and everything. These friendships last forever. And even me, being fairly new in the organization, I have made so many friendships and only get to see these people once a year, and it's a great opportunity. But in the meantime, I can call them anytime I need to, email them, get any kind of information I need to get as things develop.
How do you benefit from being a part of an association like this personally?
Personally, it's a great opportunity. I've always said pork producers gave me my master's when I was on MPPC Board of Directors, but this has given me another master's. Learning so many things, the veterinarians are so good to explain things to me, and then I can bring to them what we do on the farm. But I think also the professional development, being around all these professionals and making those friendships and making that network grow, it only makes us better than when we get home on the farm.
Barb Detterman, pork producer, but also a first vice president of a group called the United States Animal Health Association. And it was my privilege to moderate a panel for them a few days ago in North Carolina. There's a great destination for, well, school groups, civic groups, individuals, farm families, rural families, metropolitan families, right down the road where you can learn a lot about agriculture. The destination is Fair Oaks. We put the pig portion of that in the spotlight next here on the Saturday Morning Show. About 13 minutes before 6 here on the Saturday Morning Show, Max Armstrong with you this morning. Feel free to follow me on Twitter if you want to. I tweet on a regular basis. I think there are about 10,400 folks who follow my tweets there. Of late, many of them have been about the Cubs. Some will be about WGN from time to time. A lot of them are about agriculture. I'm on Facebook, and my personal Facebook is filled up. I can't add any more friends on it. But Max Armstrong Tractor app, that's a Facebook presence where I don't think there's a limit on it. Instagram, yeah, I post stuff there from time to time, broadcaster Max Armstrong. So it's fun to be socially connected with you folks through the social media. Down the road, Fair Oaks, Indiana. Well, for a long time, there was nothing at Fair Oaks to speak of. There is actually a little town, but it's not right next to where the action is in that Fair Oaks Farms location, where there is a farmhouse restaurant. Oh, it's great. I dined there the other night, as a matter of fact. There is the dairy adventure, where you learn a lot about the dairy industry. There's a crop adventure now that has a field-to-table interactive exhibit, and there is the pig adventure. The vice president of pig production for Belstra Milling Company, John Hook, sat with me, and we talked about what goes on there, where tens of thousands of people are learning every year at an edutainment, agritainment destination, John Hook calls it. He says at that location down there, well, what the people do for the pigs is what pork production is all about at Fair Oaks, but the Pork Education Center, John says, is about what the pigs do for us people.
And so this facility showcases the pig and its many uses in both food, pharmaceutical, clothing, how this pig benefits humankind.
A heavy dose of education, but the tantalizing part of it is the fun also for the kids.
You right? bet.
Talk about what goes on here otherwise.
Yeah, this is a station where people can board the buses for the tour. And while they're waiting or while they're browsing through here, they can get all kinds of facts about the use of the pig. As you can see behind me, there's a ropes course with gamified ropes course, we call it. It has three superheroes. One is Farmer John, one is Susie the Scientist, and one is Chef Paul. And there are iPads up there, and kids can play a game of as they go from station to station on the ropes course. So we have a saying around here at Fair Oaks. It's called edutainment and or agritainment. And so we want to educate the public while entertaining them as well. And that's the beauty of agriculture, is it's not only fascinating from a technology standpoint, but you can have a lot of fun learning as well.
We have found a quiet moment here. I can imagine those are rare in this facility. How many young people and how many adults would come through here over the course of a year?
Yeah, we have between 80 and 100,000 visitors through the pig exhibit. We have between 100 and 140,000 through all the exhibits here. About a third of those are school kids, anywhere from first grade on up through high school. A couple of weeks ago, we had over 10,000 FFA kids come through. And so the range of capacity is fairly large. And so we have about 60,000 that just kind of walk in or are on family vacations and that sort of thing as well.
I'm reading some of the signage on the wall. One points out that a pig produces 475 strips of bacon. You have a lot of subtle messages here to impart knowledge about animal agriculture.
Sure, and we've kind of tried to look at it in a fun and unique way. I think there's another poster behind me that talks about sausage links and how many you would get out of a pig and that sort of thing. How many pigs are born on the farm. I know there's a poster also that talks about, and it has 80,000 piglets on the wall, which is about the average production out of the Pig Adventure farm. And so there's a lot of neat ways to kind of convey what pigs do for people and how really amazing the pig is for people.
How would you describe the structure itself? For someone who's never been here, it's like a tall, for want of a better term, machine shed, to kind of put it in perspective.
Yeah, that's a great question, Max, because it was designed, some of the architecture is designed, if you've been in the pig business for a number of years, you will see the monoslope roof, which was a very popular building back in the 70s as pigs started to move inside. You'll also see fans on the outside, which really demonstrate the types of buildings we're building today. We have a high ceiling in this for no other reason than to get this ropes course in here, and we have the ropes course is three stories, and so there are a lot of unique little accents to the building, and probably one of the signature exhibits here is the playhouse. We have what we call, as a farmer, I never thought I'd be using terms like whimsical and things like that, but there's a whimsical playhouse that features a lot of pig facts and pig themes.
It's a very cool thing, I must tell you, as well. That's John Hook, our friend with Belstra Milling down at DeMott, Indiana, and they are very involved, of course, in the pig adventure at Fair Oaks Farms. They call it an escape to the country, but there's a lot of fun and food and learning there, and you can explore modern farms, reconnect with nature and animals and our planet, they say. So yeah, swing off I-65 sometime down there and check out Fair Oaks. You see the signs as you're going down I-65, and you get plenty of an alert there that the destination is coming up. They're open Monday through Saturday from 9 to 5, Sundays from 10 to 5 on the adventure side. Now, the farmhouse restaurant, I think, has different hours. You might want to go online and check that out because it's a nice place to dine there down I-65. Well, they have some plans of their own in Naperville for the Agriculture Interpretive Center, and tonight Orion and I will be involved in the barn-raising fundraising event for what is being called the Agricultural Interpretive Center at Naper Settlement in Naperville. The plan is to have that in place in about 2 years' time, I believe, is when they want to have the Ag Interpretive Center there that will do a number of things. They want to convey the story of farming as it had developed in the Naperville community, but it's going to be much more than that. This is not going to be necessarily a historic place. It will be a teaching location, too. They want to recognize farmers as inventors and engineers and entrepreneurs. They want to underscore that farming is vital in the production of our food. They want to convey the continuing relevance of agriculture today and how it continues to function in our region, even with the transformation of farmland into subdivisions. They will demonstrate the technology and connect the principles of STEM learning in the history of farming. So it will be an education destination as well. A whole bunch of things they'll touch on in that education process: the science of food preservation, the processes of planting and harvesting the crops, the mechanics of simple machines. There'll be an old reaper, I guess, as a part of the display, from what I understand. They'll have a bunch of interactive experiences there as a part of that display at Naper Settlement, right in Naperville. I think it's about 12 acres altogether that you find in Naper Settlement, but they have a specific location there within Naper Settlement where they intend to build the Agricultural Interpretive Center. You can find a lot of information about it by going online to, I believe their website is napersettlement.com, napersettlement.com. Anyway, Big O and I are, let me correct that. napersettlement.org is their correct web address. So, yeah, check that out. And Ori and I look forward to seeing a bunch of friends in Naperville tonight at the barn raising. I spent a lot of time in the South, but I've resigned myself to the fact that I will never be a Southerner. And I'm so thankful for the chance to escape back to the Midwest every week, to be honest with you. But did you see the story the other day about collard greens? Neiman Marcus is going, they are selling, you know, through their catalog, the needless markup on collard greens. Now, okay, forgive me. Some of you, of course, were Southern-born and raised, and you love your collards. I'm not there yet. I'm just not there yet. And I'll be honest with you that, other Southern things I struggle with. But Neiman Marcus is selling collard greens online for $66. Yeah, your order will arrive in 4 12-ounce trays, and overall, those will serve 8 to 10 people. And Needless Markup will be pleased to let you have that for $66. Oh, wait a minute. That doesn't even include shipping. $66 plus $15.50 for your frozen collard greens from Neiman Marcus. Stand by. Mike Steven is waiting in the wings right after the news here on the Saturday Morning Show. Another delicacy of the South I haven't learned to love yet. Grits. Mm-mm, not yet. All the locals will say, cover it up with stuff. Put all kinds of stuff on there. Okay. You'll get me there someday, I guess. That's the Saturday Morning Show. Max Armstrong here with you on behalf of Orion Samuelson. Thanks to Bob Ferguson, the engineer. Mr. Steven, how are you, Bob?
I'm doing great. I'll tell you something. Grits, I'm there. I love it. I love grits, man. Put some cheese. Put some hot sauce in there.
I know.
Woo! Some shrimp.
Just put the cheese and the hot sauce and the shrimp together, and that's going to be fine. You don't need the grits in there.
Oh, man. Come on now. How you been?
Real good, sir. Thanks a lot.
Good,
appreciate
good.
It.
Good show this morning. I'll tell you what, it was pandemonium here in Chicago. You know what else is nice? And this is, I really sincerely believe this. You know, for so many years, people have said, well, if the Cubs win the World Series, this place is going to burn. It's going to go nuts. Hey, we're still here. We made it, and I'm proud of that fact.
Amazingly civil around this celebration. That was pretty cool.
No, it was great. So proud of the Cubs, and really such a great thing for Chicago. So it was a lot of fun.
And you know what I take real pride in, too? So much of the news emanating out of this city that gets attention across the country is bad news.
Yep.
And so this week, they saw the city at its best.
Absolutely.
Over the world. As a matter of fact, I was receiving social media messages from folks I know in Australia, New Zealand, and Belgium. Just very excited about it.
Absolutely. And these guys, you just want to give them a hug, this team. Yeah. Like, they're so lovable, you know?
They're right out of Central Casting.
Totally.
And guess what? Isn't it amazing? They can tie together two sentences.
That's right. How about it? The stand-up gentlemen. So, hey, Max, always great to talk to you, my man. Nice show.
Thanks, Mike. Take it easy, bud.
All righty. There he goes, Max Armstrong with the Saturday Morning Show.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.